Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 3rd, 2026. Well, late in the last century, the Chrétien government, led by then Finance Minister Paul Martin, created the CPPIB, or Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, a mechanism to get at CPP money locked up in safe long-term bonds and such. The CPPIB determined to leap into the investment fast lane, behaving as a hedge fund. It promised to take politics out of its investing, which in practice meant using citizen funds without moral constraints. Profit would be the first and last of its laws, and so it's been for nearly 30 years. And what that's led to is a portfolio filled with war, environmental degradation, and genocide. But still, it's not enough. Becca Steckel is a research and policy analyst with Just Peace Advocates, whose special area of study is Canadian institutional complicity in the occupations of Palestine and Kashmir. Now, Becca and the JPA have released the report, CPPIB Doubles Down, Increases Investments in Genocide, War Crimes, and Apartheid to more than $54 billion. It's an examination of the current government's turbocharged dedication to profiting from the crimes of the century. Becca Steckel in the first half, and Colombians voted over the weekend, and though the first ballot didn't produce a clear presidential winner, it did reveal a plethora of irregularities and interference in the country's free and fair exercise of popular democracy. What that means for the next round, due June 21st, is of extreme concern, not only for Colombia's future political stability, but too for its neighbors and all of South America. Dan Kovalik's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's death squads, has served as a foreign observer to elections in that country, and acts currently as Colombian President Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States. Dan's book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and his latest co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Dan Kovalik and Colombia's parlous election in the second half. But first, Becca Steckel and understanding how your pension profits the suffering of distant others. Welcome to the program, Becca.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Becca, can we begin with who and what is the JPA, and how did you become involved with its work?
Yeah, so JPA, or Just Peace Advocates, we are a Canadian human rights organization, and we focus particularly on realizing the right to self-determination of the Palestinian and Kashmiri peoples. And as a Canadian organization in the Imperial Corps, one of the ways that we do that and we show active solidarity is by holding our government accountable for its complicity. And so I've been involved in JPA for almost a year and a half now. I'm a research and policy analyst and grateful to be able to work on a lot of the campaigns we do and a lot of the research and attempts to expose and hold our Canadian institutions accountable for participation in atrocious crimes.
Yeah, well, we're awash in atrocity, that's for sure. Now, the new report out is CPPIB Doubles Down, Increases Investments in Genocide, War Crimes, and Apartheid to more than $54 billion. Although it's been in place for a generation, many Canadians probably don't even know what the CPPIB is or what they do or where they came about. I've mentioned it briefly in the introduction. It's been almost 30 years. But what's so different about the CPPIB as opposed to the CPP, the deductions I see on my paycheck?
Yeah, great question. And I think it is something that not a lot of people know about, and potentially that's intentional. But CPP deductions are actually what your money is going into to fund the Canada Pension Plan. So residents of Canada, with the exception of Quebec, who has their own pension plan, we pay deductions on our taxes that goes to fund CPP, which is a national social insurance plan that provides funds for people when they retire or after change leading to disability or death for family members in that case. And so the funds that come off your paycheck, all of our paychecks, goes into CPP, and the CPP Investment Board, so CPPIB, is who is responsible for managing those funds and investing those funds for the benefit of all Canadians.
I describe it as a sort of a turbocharging. When it began, Paul Martin said, we're going to take the politics out of CPP investment. And what he was meaning there was that there was going to be no more bleeding hearts about this. We were going to, in their own words, maximize long-term returns without undue risk or loss. And that was going to be their mantra, and no hurt puppies or bleeding refugees was going to make any difference to what they invested in.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we see that the investments are the result of death and destruction in large part. And it's unfortunate. It's more than unfortunate. There's not really adequate words, but it's also unfortunate that most Canadians don't realize what's happening with our money. And then when we retire or are disabled and use CPP, we don't know exactly how that money comes to be.
The report says it's doubling down. Now, is that a literal? Like they're doubled down? I see that the JPA has been conducting this study of the CPPIB. This is the seventh report issued. Have they actually doubled their investment in since last year or in that seven-year period? Or is that metaphorical?
Yeah, absolutely. It has doubled. Not from last year necessarily, nearly. So it can be hard to compare year to year, in part because the list of the database of companies that we use that we say are complicit in this case, in Israel's crimes, including genocide, occupation, and apartheid, that list of companies changes because more research is done and companies get added to the various lists that we use. And so year to year, it can be hard to compare. That being said, the last couple of years, in addition to analyzing the current year, we've gone back and analyzed the last couple of years to see what that difference is. So in 2023 to 2024, they do their fiscal year March 31st. So it covers parts of each year. They were invested in about $20 billion in complicit companies. The next year, it was $31 billion. And this year is $54.8 billion. So from last year, we go over 24 more billion dollars. And 2 years ago, we've actually almost tripled from 20 billion to 54 billion.
There used to be an idea. I mean, I imagine this is still around somewhere in the language of corporate responsibility and responsible investment choices, not just, to make the most, to maximize my returns. I mean, I can see that statement, maximizing long-term returns without undue risk or loss being read out at the next Nuremberg, Yeah, but I was just maximizing long-term returns, and the CPPIB has, in its beginning anyway, it had what they called social investing policy. And they say in that they believe that social investing means different things to different people. I mean, I haven't read a wormier worm out than that, But does what remains of their idea of what social, socially responsible investment, how much of that remains in what we see in actuality?
Yeah, what we see in actuality is that the policies that pensions, including in this case, obviously, CPPIB and many other pensions have, is that it's something in writing that doesn't necessarily lead to material impact. And so in specific, the CPPIB social investment policy is also more focused on climate overall. But the reality is that even organizations that have very clear policies, have signed on to the UN principles of responsible investment, things like that. In reality, what we're seeing is that CPP still has $54 billion, which is a number that most of us can't even grasp, invested in companies that are actively killing people, companies that are actively destroying Palestinian land and in other places, right? Like there's a lot of crossover, whether it's in occupied Palestine or Democratic Republic of Congo, all these things are connected. And so the reality is that these policies often don't change the material impact. And in this case, CPP is still invested in these companies that are actively carrying out these crimes. And often pension plans and their leadership will try to say that they're at arm's length and they're not really doing these activities. But without financing through these investments, these companies can't carry out their activities. And so policies can be in place, but if they don't actually create material impacts that protect people, then they really are meaningless.
There's a section here on both Canadian law and international law in the report. And again, the report is the CPPIB doubles down, increases investments in genocide, war crimes, and apartheid to more than $54 billion. The bifurcation of investing choices between a company that is selling munitions to Israel, let's say, and the investing in those kinds of materials. I'm watching, for example, in the past few days, the Israeli military using white phosphorus munitions in Lebanon. So, I mean, there's companies that make white phosphorus and there's companies that sell the actual weapons. I'm sort of reaching for how restrictive in international law on the Canadian Investment Board and other Canadian companies that want to invest in these kinds of businesses. How stringent are the restrictions on how this money is invested and who's looking over or who's got the oversight of them?
Yeah, great question.
Not really. I apologize. I apologize for that. No, but you know where I'm trying to go, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's something that's really important. And often it's hard to feel like we're holding these institutions accountable, in part because it can be hard to implement international law. So in terms of how restrictive and stringent things are, so international law generally applies to states, so countries, so Canada as a state. Now, that's not always true. If you look at the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, that will hold individuals accountable. But in this case, through international law, it applies to the Canadian government. And notably, CPP is a product of Canadian legislation. So unlike another pension plan, for example, Healthcare of Ontario Pension Plan, that is created outside of Canadian law. Like it falls under specific laws, but it wasn't created because the government said, we need a pension plan for healthcare workers, for example. However, the Canadian pension plan and the Quebec pension plan, both are legislated, meaning that the government chose to make a law about this specific pension plan and how it runs and how it operates. So it's a function of the government. And in terms of the investments, again, I think the argument from these investors is often, well, we're not actually involved. We're just financing it, which again is absurd when you think about it. But that is still caught by international law. So if you look at, for example, in terms of Palestine, there's really clear legal information available because in addition to the Fourth Geneva Convention and international law, humanitarian law that has been around for decades, we also have the International Court of Justice 2024 advisory opinion, which is really specific about countries needing to stop economic and trade dealings with Israel, to stop all financial and investment relations with Israel that maintain or contribute to maintaining the illegal occupation. So it's so clear, like it's illegal under the Fourth Geneva Convention. And so Canada itself has a responsibility and should and can be held accountable for that. But it's not just in the international sphere that they could be held accountable because Canadian law has incorporated international law through the Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act and the Geneva Conventions Act. And it actually broadens the scope because of our laws here that it can apply. It doesn't apply just to countries, it can apply to specific individuals, it can apply to a corporation. And so these are very clear violations of international law, because if you think about it, a company, again, like I said earlier, without financing, a company can't carry out its activity. It's integral to the process of conducting, in these cases, illegal activity. And so Canadian law and international law work together as a process that, in theory, can hold CPPIB and its leadership accountable.
Well, and Canada is a signatory. Israel is not, but to the ICG, or ICJ, rather, the International Court of Justice, even though it seems to ignore at will many of the provisions. And within the states, if a state finds that such entities are engaged in activities that maintain the unlawful occupation, the state must take all reasonable measures to prevent the activities, such as revoking a corporation's articles of incorporation or revoking a nonprofit organization's registration in that state. These are for people that are investing into, I mean, there used to be a law, I recall, and I think Canada is a signatory to this through the UN, but that it was not allowed to invest into war zones, for example, like selling bullets and bandages into an active war. And I don't know if because this is an occupation and not a, technically a declared war, that that is a way to wiggle out of that. But at any rate, the report mentions, as you just said, that people behind these investments could find themselves charged with aiding and abetting war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Yeah, they can. So not to get into too much legalese, but through the criminal code, war crimes are applicable. And so it can be aiding and abetting, which if you look at international law, that includes, when you look at like the advisory opinion, that aiding and abetting the occupation, aiding and assisting, I think is the language they use, includes financial support and investments. And so in Canada, we do suggest that individuals, corporations can be held accountable through Canadian law for aiding and abetting the illegal occupation. And again, this includes the ongoing genocide in Gaza and also the actions that involve the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, as well as the occupied Syrian Golan. This occupation has been ongoing for decades. And so while we've seen a very clear escalation, this isn't new, I guess, to say. It's, again, this is our seventh year doing this analysis. And ironically, while much of the world has come to see the reality of what Palestinians are enduring and have been enduring, and while arguably the information is more readily available, in large part because people have decided to look and pay attention, it's even more brazen that the Canadian government has doubled down, essentially, to invest, to increase their investments in companies that are actively supporting the ethnic cleansing, forced displacement, genocide, apartheid regime that Israel continues with impunity. And I think not easily shocked, but it was surprising, for lack of a better word, to see that so many of their new investments, CPPIB's new investments that it hasn't had over the last 2 years, are Israeli companies that are actively complicit in Israel's crimes. That was, let me say, unexpected, and a very brazen choice to invest in those companies.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Becca Steckel. She is a research and policy analyst with Just Peace Advocates. Her special area of study is Canadian institutional complicity in the occupations of Palestine and Kashmir. They, Becca and the JPA, have released this year's report, CPPIB Doubles Down, Increases Investments in Genocide, War Crimes, and Apartheid to more than $54 billion. And Becca, more than just increasing their investments, the rhetoric in Canada has gone through the roof. And it looks like policing against people that are standing in opposition to Canadian policy of aiding and abetting, and that I use that in the legal sense, the genocide ongoing and that has been ongoing for many decades, but has accelerated markedly in the last few years. What about pushback, Becca? Has the JPA experienced any kind of pushback for releasing this report or the work that it's been doing in this area?
We've always received pushback. I think our work pushes up against a lot of, it disrupts the status quo, and it also causes people to rethink a bit about what they might have previously, the narrative they've previously understood. So we do get pushback. That's not new. Interestingly, we seem to get a lot of pushback on, this is not a secret, it's very clear online. We get a lot of pushback for our work we do related to charities. We do get pushback on divestment, but I would say our charity work is much more of a target. But we
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? The charity, the JPA, raising money itself, or focusing on other, like on Jewish charities, for example, that have been delisted in recent years.
Yeah. So focusing on charities that are actively supporting the illegal occupation, and so there is a lot of narrative around that we're targeting Jewish charities, which in fact we're very explicitly not. That's not the filter we use. We look at support for the illegal occupation, the apartheid regime, whether that's through illegal settlements or the Israeli military. And so there's a lot of pushback on that, particularly as the CRA has taken action to implement the Income Tax Act, which is exactly what we're asking them to do. We're not asking them to create new law. We're simply asking them to enforce the law and CRA policy as it is. And so there's a lot of pushback on that, in part because a lot of these charities that have been supporting Israel's illegal activity are doing that through tax breaks. And so it's a significant impact to lose charitable status. And I think that can cause more pushback because it feels more direct to impact people versus pension divestment. People might disagree or have opinions and push back on it, but it's not necessarily affecting their personal activities per se, if that makes sense.
Well, I find it galling personally as a Canadian taxpayer that not only is my pension, parts of it at least, being used to fund odious crimes and that are flying in the face of international and domestic laws as it is, it would seem to me. But also my tax, the money that I'm being taxed for other things, while someone else is taking tax breaks to fund these same sorts of things. And so denying the government revenue that they have to make up by taxing me more.
Exactly. And it's, which is why I think the work we're doing impacts a lot of people, again, not necessarily by choice, but because we're paying into CPP, or if you're in Quebec, you're paying into the Quebec pension plan. Our tax money is being used not by our consent, except for the fact that if we're paying taxes. And so I think that's, you see a lot of people get activated and rightly enraged when they realize that their money is funding this, because most of us don't want that to be the case. And I think we've obviously over the last couple of years seen an increase in policing, like you mentioned, of folks who are standing up against genocide. And that's also not new. When we started as an organization, one of the main things we did was really being a resource for folks who were targeted, and supporting them, connecting them with legal support. And that has continued. There has been other organizations and more organizations over the last few years who have begun to do that as well. But we see that continue. And it's not, again, it's not surprising, because the reality is this type of policing, this violent policing, policing inherently is violent, as part of the settler colonial state. Like, this isn't new. It's just being applied to more people more often, and so it's being seen more, versus it's always been happening, particularly to Black and Indigenous folks, to unhoused folks, but we see it more and more. And obviously our government is trying to institute laws to make that easier for police, through bills like C9. Unfortunately, not nothing new, but more of what has been and is expected from a settler colonial state, but it certainly is increasing. And
you don't expect to be registered like or wiped out like Sammy Dune was in Vancouver, an organization that was helping Palestinian prisoners and advocating for them, and then being designated as being affiliated with terrorism and having their charter revoked.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen it in the UK as well with the deeming of Palestine Action as a terrorist group, and that has since been repealed to at least some degree. But yet, those protesters who are standing up literally with their bodies, putting those in the way of weapons being sent to Israel, still being prosecuted, irregardless of that.
And others arrested in the street for holding banners that even mention the name, just the name of
Exactly.
And this is the kind of stuff that's coming to our country. We're fast running out of time. Can we talk before we go, Becca, just about your allies in this and in putting together this report? This wasn't just peace advocates that drew this up.
In this case, it actually was. We do often work with a lot of partner orgs, but for CPP this year, we actually did pull this together. Now, the work we've done over the years absolutely builds off of a lot of groups' work, and there's awesome groups like Shift, Action for Pension Wealth, who's doing other CPP related work, and a lot of grassroots orgs we work with have really. Our reports provide information, and then it's really those on the ground, those grassroots groups who take it and run with it and put it into action. And we're grateful to be able to work with them.
Oh, I see. I misread. What I'm looking at is where your source information came from, Who Profits, AFSC Investigate, UN Database Canada, Stop Arming Israel. These various organizations don't buy into the occupation. These are where you got your research materials to put together this report on your own. I don't want to take away credit from all the hard work you guys are doing, of course, but it takes a village in a sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And we couldn't do the report without those orgs. We do use those orgs. They each have their own database and have done immense amounts of research. And so we really use that to build off of, and many of those groups have been doing that for a long time, particularly Who Profits and AFSC Investigate. And that research is invaluable for us.
Well, if you want to find out more about the work Becca and Just Peace Advocates are doing, go to their website, justpeaceadvocates.ca. Thanks a lot, Becca, for coming on and enduring my broken English.
No, it's great. Thank you so much for having me, and always grateful to be able to be in this work with people who we're all pushing in the same direction.
Yeah, keep the shoulder to the stone. I'm going to take a brief break now, and I'll be joined after the break by Dan Kowalik. And Dan and I are going to talk about what's going on in Colombia right now. With their election and the hanky-panky going on there, but much more as well. Thanks again, Becca.
Thank you.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire, fire.
There's a theocratic state that wants to make the Middle East great. They got a plan for the whole region they want to control. They have proxy militias and bot farms causing chaos and selling arms. They think they're better than the rest, and they're on an imperial quest. Not enough to just kill your own, as the past decades have shown. They're always looking to expand, always off to steal more land. I'm talking clearly about a place being bombed severely, where before it's over, people there need to rise up everywhere. About to fall, even when it's not getting bombed.